always loved my dad. We've always been close, but he was really absent emotionally, physically, all that kind of stuff growing up. I remember a lot of that. I remember him coming home with his laptop and going into the green lazy boy chair in our kind of mustard colored living room. And, you know, he would just eat dinner quickly and then go back to work. And then he would come home from work and go back to work. What it makes you feel like when you're a kid, it makes you feel like you're not important.
What's up? Hey, thanks so much for tuning in today. Really important conversation about the myths and misconceptions when it comes to work and life and creating balance. My guest today is Megan Hyatt Miller. She's the daughter of Michael Hyatt. Some of you might know Michael Hyatt. He's been on the show before. I'm a big fan of both of theirs. She is the co-host with her father of a podcast called Lead to Win. And she has recently, with her father, co-written a book called Win at Work and Succeed at Life. It's a great book. I've had the opportunity to read it. I'm telling you that there are so many very specific takeaways that will help you, even if you're not an entrepreneur, if you are someone who's working in a career and you want to balance family, even if you're not a parent. Many of us are wrapped up in this, as she refers to, culture of hustle, where we feel like we have to be doing something at all times. We have to be overachieving. We have to be go, 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 go. And it's created stress, damage to our relationships, damage to our health, damage to our spirit. We're disconnected because of it. Megan is a mother of five, and she's the CEO of Michael Hyatt & Company. And under her leadership, the company was recently named one of Inc. magazine's best workplaces. Megan and I have had the chance to talk on quite a few different occasions, and we're just really in alignment, I think, in our beliefs. But today, I want to talk specifically about, like, what does this look like for you? What does this look like if maybe you don't have a partner or a husband who's helpful? Or maybe you're not in a position where you can kind of structure your own work hours because hashtag the boss. We answer all of those questions and so much more in today's episode. Megan will be with us in just a moment. But before we get to the interview, I wanted to share a special thank you with today's show sponsor, Third Love. You get 20% off your first order when you go to thirdlove.com/Shalene. And ladies, let me tell you, you will not own a better bra. I love Third Love because they have more than 80 different sizes, including signature half cup sizes. I mean, just look around. Common sense would tell you that we don't just come in A, B, C, or D sizes. Third Love uses specific measurements that they've taken from millions of women to design the perfect bra that gives you like all day comfort and all day support. All you do is go to their website and they've got a fitting room quiz. It takes like 20 seconds. And it will basically help you find the perfect fitting bra and just also like your individual taste and styles. They don't have tags. They're really lightweight. They've got great support. The straps don't slip. My personal favorites, two of them, I love the classic plunge bra. I've got it in pretty much every color. And I also love the 24/7 classic t-shirt bra. That's an awesome bra too. Third Love stands behind all of their products. If you don't absolutely love it, you can return it or exchange it for free up to 60 days. Third Love knows that there's a perfect bra for you. So right now, you get 20% off as a listener by going to thirdlove.com/Shalene. Again, thirdlove.com/Shalene for your perfect fitting bra. All right, now let's talk to Megan. Megan, thank you so much for joining me today on The Shalene Show. I thought it'd be fun. They've got to hear the introduction and a little bit about your background before we started, but I didn't learn about how we were connected until I did an interview with you.
Yes. Well, it was so fun actually to share that story with you. So this goes back to probably 2013, 2014. I was not yet the CEO of Michael Hyatt & Company. I wasn't even the chief operating officer yet. And I heard you speak at an event led by our mutual friend, Jeff Walker. And I told you when I interviewed you, I honestly don't even remember what you were talking about. It was something involving a cake mix and like make it as easy as a cake. That's all I kind of vaguely remember. I remember thinking it was awesome. But what really stuck with me is something I think you kind of said as a side comment. You made a comment that you finished work every day at 3:30 so you could pick your kids up at school. And at that time, just to contextualize, you know, 5 kids now who are ages 20 to 2. At that time, I had 4 kids. I had recently become a mom, so inherited 2, adopted 2. And I was trying to figure out how in the world I was going to make all this work, right? You know, how was I going to take care of my newly adopted sons, both of whom had some special needs, while my dad had recently asked me to step into the chief operating officer role. And I was like, how is this going to work? You know, I mean, it feels like this impossible choice, what we talk about in the book, where you got to choose one or the other. And what it meant to me to see another woman a little bit further ahead in the journey, who was a CEO, who had a successful business and a family, and that you figured out how to do it on your own terms, that you said, okay, here's my hard boundary. And I think you said something like there weren't any opportunities after 3:30 that were more important than the opportunity that you had with your children. And I mean, my head just kind of exploded. I think this is, by the way, the value of representation. Sometimes we have to see someone else who we can relate to doing something before we think it's possible for us. And it gave me the courage to go back to my dad and say, hey, I want to say yes to this opportunity to become the chief operating officer, but I'm going to need to be done at 3:30 every day to pick my kids up for school. I mean, I just like ripped that page straight out of your playbook.
I love that.
And he said, you know what? I think if you feel like you can deliver the operating results, I'm willing to give it a shot. And we've never looked back. And now we actually have our whole team functionally on that schedule as of last year, which is pretty awesome. So thank you for your leadership and your mentorship from afar. We didn't actually meet each other until a couple of years after that, but right. I'm really, really grateful.
It's interesting how I always say to people, you never know if it's going to be like a sentence that's going to impact someone. When you go to a live event or when you're listening to speakers at a seminar, sometimes it's not even the content. Like I was speaking that day about marketing. I was sharing like a very specific strategy around marketing. And I think the whole cake mix, that was like an analogy regarding marketing. But it's interesting that the piece that had a profound impact on you was me kind of explaining how I approach business and life. And that wasn't the gist of my presentation. And I just think that's why it is so important to just really listen. Like sometimes it's those conversations we have on an airplane or in an elevator, not so much recently, but you know, when you just never know, like that one sentence that you just kind of like leave the presentation and you're like, your brain just goes, I just had a aha moment.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm really excited about sharing your story here on the Chalene Show, and especially men and women, but especially I think for women, you know, so much has changed in the last 20 years where we are expected to be amazing homemakers, to have like an all white interior, our children in matching white outfits and like little cuffed khakis and white polos, and our house is beautiful with pompous grass, and we are a boss babe who runs this multi-million dollar corporation, and we're a stay-at-home mom, and we're, you know, these amazing leaders. And the notion of having work-life balance is difficult. It's hard. Yeah. It's challenging. Yeah. And it looks like it's super easy when you look on Instagram, et cetera. It just looks so effortless. And so then you hear the opposite where people say, like, listen, it's not possible. So just drop the idea that it is possible. And that always rubbed me the wrong way. And I was so happy when you and I chatted recently and you're like, in your own words, why is it it's dangerous to believe that it's not possible?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I just want to kind of affirm that this is not a topic that we have been presented with in a way that actually works by and large. There are only, you know, probably a handful of people that have really been able to communicate in about it that doesn't either leave people feeling like a failure or like it's so soft and not serious enough if you're a high achiever that it's worth giving your time to, you know? So whichever camp or both you fall into, I think that's really normal, you know? But the danger of what we call in this book, When It Work and Succeed at Life, as of the hustle fallacy, which is kind of like what we see a lot in influencer culture. We see it in ourselves, you know, and we kind of have this conversation about, you know, once I just get through this first product launch, or once I hire my first employee, or once I, you know, hit $1 million in annual revenue, or fill in the blank, once the kids start school, you know, then I'll be able to get back to fill in the blank, you know, my most important relationships, my health, et cetera. The problem is these things have a way of getting strung together in a series of seasons that turns into something permanent. And before we know it, we have made compromises in our most important relationships, in our health. And sometimes it's too late to get those things back. You know, you and I were talking a little bit about that when we talked before. And then you have regret and it just stinks so much. You know, my dad and I, in writing this book, we were like, hey, that option stinks. And then the only other option we're really presented with is something we call the ambition break, which is where you say, okay, either I've done that and I know the consequences and I don't want to keep doing it, or I'm afraid of the consequences and I don't want to do it. So I'm just going to come over here and tap the brake of my ambition and decide that my impact in the world, my professional potential, et cetera, it's just going to have to be diminished because I'm not willing to make that trade-off. And what we really say is, no, we want a third option that looks like winning at work and succeeding at life, what we call the double win, where work and life are not in opposition or in competition with one another, that they're really in harmony with each other. And that while there's not enough time to do everything, we all know that, we've all tried and failed, that there is enough time to do the most important things when you are intentional and you design your life in that way.
Well, you talk so much in the book about the importance of constraint, which for some people, that word, just like the word constraint, feels constricting, like I'm going to have claustrophobia. I don't have control.
Yeah.
But the opposite is true. So can you kind of explain to our listeners what you mean by that?
Well, I have come to love constraints. And in my experience, constraints, we talk about this in the book, are really a very powerful tool in driving productivity and innovation and the key, freedom. So in my own story, and I think in your story too, you know, that constraint of 3:30, and by the way, a 6 or 6.5 hour workday is not what we mean by the double win. What we're really talking about when we talk about constraints is deciding a time that you're going to start work and stop work every day. And when you're not going to work outside of work, like, are you going to work at night? You know, work on the weekends, on vacation, you know, we would recommend that you not do that. What happens when you put those constraints in place is that you begin to make way better decisions about what is most high leverage for you. Where is your greatest contribution? What's going to drive results in a disproportionate way than the effort you're putting in? You know, where do you get the maximum ROI? And so when I think about this for myself, I think a big reason that I have been able to be as successful as I have is because I've only had 6, 6.5 hours a day to do it. You know, that's the constraint that I put on my life. And that means I have to be militant about what am I going to be spending my time on? I don't have time to waste. I don't have time to do fluffy stuff. I don't have time to get distracted, but I do have enough time to get everything done. And little case in point here that's kind of fun. So we moved to this shorter work day last year in April in the middle of COVID. You know, our team came and they were overwhelmed and just overwhelmed with kids and, you know, everything was hard all of a sudden, like things we'd never tried to do before, like work with our 2-year-old climbing on our back in a Zoom call, like while the kids are homeschooling, all of a sudden these things are happening at once. And so we decided to do an experiment with this 6-hour workday. And again, this is not essential for the double win, but this is what we did. And we decided not to cut anybody's pay, but we were going to go to 25% less time each week. Well, we ended up making that permanent, and our operating results at the end of the year, we already had an aggressive profit goal that was 100% ahead of what the previous year was. We finished 50% ahead of that goal, which was just amazing, with 25% less time. And that's kind of what I'm talking about. That's the power of constraints, because you have to make better choices.
When you say constraints, in other words, you're using the word constraint to have systems, to have rules in place, to have specific stated boundaries, to have not just habits, but like a lot of structure. And it's not just like thinking about it, but it's like mandating it not only for yourself, but letting other people know, like, these are my boundaries.
Right.
These are my constraints. These are my family's rules. Mm-hmm. And you're absolutely right when you say, when you do that, it starts to make difficult decisions easier for you. When people ask you to do things where you're like, oh gosh, if I don't say yes, they're going to hate me. Or if I say I can't do it, they're not going to ask me to do it again, or they won't like me. Like all the things we say yes to because we're people pleasers, or we're the doer. When you just simply don't have the time, it's a lot easier to say, I wish I could. Unfortunately, I'm not able to. And you don't even have to offer an explanation.
That's right.
It does make it so much easier. I did that, you know, today I have one of those situations where I'm like, oh man, the people pleaser side of me wants to say yes to this, but I just don't have that in the constraints that I've set up for myself in the season.
Yeah, I think that's
so powerful. So huge.
Well, we talk about in the book this idea of establishing your non-negotiables in three areas. So we start with self-care, you know, and this is not like you're pie in the sky. If everything went right in your day, what would you love to include? This is like non-negotiables. You know that this is what it takes for you to perform at your best. And really at the heart of it, this whole concept is around driving your performance. And so what are your non-negotiables in terms of your self-care? What are your non-negotiables in terms of your relational priorities? And then what are your non-negotiables in terms of your professional results? So self-care, relational priorities, and professional results in that order for a reason, from a performance standpoint, that's how it has to work for it to be effective. And, you know, what we're really talking about is designing your own double win, creating a vision for your life so that when those things, like you were talking about, Shalene, come up, these opportunities, you can weigh them against your non-negotiables and say, yeah, you know, one of my non-negotiables for me is I want to sit down at the dinner table with my kids five nights a week. Necessarily care so much what is being served. That's not part of the non-negotiable, but I want to look in their eyes and I want to hear about their day and I want to hear what they're grateful for and what their best thing was. We call that the gratitude report. You know, so I know that if I'm saying yes to business dinners two or three nights a week, most weeks, I'm not going to be faithful to my non-negotiable. And that is my ultimate priority. And so that's how it helps you in this decision-making process where it helps to protect the things that matter most to you.
What is one of your non-negotiables as it relates to your professional life?
Yeah, well, I mean, a couple things. So I think about it like this. My job is to deliver our annual budget as a CEO of the company, to develop my executives and set the vision for our future. Those are really my three non-negotiables. So if I don't have time in my calendar to do those things, so for example, if I was doing too many podcast interviews so that I didn't have time to meet with my executives and coach them, now all of a sudden I'm violating my non-negotiables, right? Because I know that the future of our business depends on my executive team reaching their full potential and making their maximum contribution. So it just helps to kind of filter those things.
Mm-hmm. What about for that person who is thinking to themselves, and I've heard this, you know, when I share my own non-negotiables, like my day doesn't start until 11, you know, like our time today, I'm on Pacific time, but our interview didn't start until 11 because the very first half of my day is devoted to family and things I need to do for my own self-care to get into the right state for work. Right. And that's a non-negotiable for me. But I've often heard from, you know, and rightfully to be criticized by those in my audience who might say, that's great if you're the boss.
Right.
But if you're not, how do I establish? I'd love to establish these non-negotiables, but I don't have that privilege.
That level of autonomy, maybe. Totally understand that. So first of all, just because you can't do everything that we're talking about doesn't mean you can't do anything. And I think most of us win these battles one small choice at a time, not in a wholesale overhaul of our life. You know, we're making incremental progress toward kind of what our ideal vision for our life is. So certainly I've been in that situation in the past. And I think it looks like, you know, getting really clear on where am I assuming that there's external pressure to not have boundaries, like this is coming totally from my boss or this is coming from the culture of my work environment. Sometimes we think that that's happening and it's not actually happening. Sometimes legitimately it is and we have to deal with that. Sometimes it's more that we're putting pressure on ourselves that there's not really been a spoken expectation. And if we were to, for example, not check our email overnight, that there wouldn't be any consequence to that. Now, if you live in a culture or work in a culture where there is a stated expectation that, you know, your butt's in the chair 12 hours a day or, you know, 10 hours a day, what I would always recommend is that you go to your boss with a proposal that is in his or her best interest. So, you know, whenever you're trying to sell
That's the key phrase. I really want to slow down and say that.
Yeah.
Because I do think there is a sense of entitlement a little bit, especially with certain generations that shall remain nameless. Where there's a sense of entitlement that if it's presented in that way as the CEO, as the boss, you're just like your defenses are up. But if you, like you just said, if you present it in such a way where it's a win for them.
Right. Like, tell me why this matters to me. Absolutely. And the way that you do that is you think, okay, like, what does my boss care about? You know, what matters to her? Well, probably financial results are going to be at the top of the list. You just heard my list, right? And financial results was at the top of that list.
Yep.
So how can your boundaries around your workday enable you to make a greater contribution, not equal, but a greater contribution to financial results than otherwise you would if you just continued kind of with the status quo? Well, I mean, probably you're going to have better ideas, better innovation, more creativity. And I would set it up like an experiment. You know, hey, I wonder if you would be willing, in the interest of seeing if I can make an even greater contribution with some kind of hard edges on my day, try this for 30 days or 60 days. And then, you know what, if it's not working for you, no problem. We can always go back to what we were doing before. And I think, you know, the fear of any boss, if they're going to allow these kinds of constraints, is that they're going to lose productivity, they're going to lose financial results. And so you kind of have to prove that wrong sometimes in an experiment like this. And I think most good bosses who are thinking about, you know, things from a results-oriented perspective would be willing to consider that.
That's great. I've heard from two different types of experiences with regard to people going home to work from home due to COVID. Team members, staff members, yeah, people who aren't necessarily the CEO or the boss. And I've heard from those who said, you know, I set up a very specific schedule. I really stuck to it. It was nice that I didn't have to commute. And because of that, I was much more effective. I got more done in less time. And that gave me more time for self-care, for personal time.
Yep.
Then I've also heard from people who, in my estimation, I'm curious if you've heard similar.
Yeah.
Those who approached it from the, well, I don't have structured time now, so as long as I get my work done during the day, I'm good. And so for that reason, they kind of did a little bit of personal, a little bit of work, a little bit of personal, a little bit of work, mm-hmm, a little bit of personal, a little bit of work, and yeah, ended up feeling like they were never not yeah working.
Yes.
Like that they were yep doing it 7 days a week. And, you know, the fact that you took time to write an email at 9 o'clock at night and you forget the fact that, like, oh yeah, that's right, from 11 until 1, I was having coffee and doing yoga, you know,
right, so
it feels
right
like you're working until 9 o'clock at night.
Yep.
It's this feeling that like I'm doing it all the time because you're doing yep it in little bits and pieces. What have you heard and what is your recommendation?
Yeah, so totally. I've heard both of those things. And, you know, I think this is, again, where being intentional, my dad often says, we rarely drift to a destination that we would choose. Mm,
yes, you know, I love that quote from him.
You know, if we just kind of like got in a river and just got in our little kayak and didn't paddle, and, you know, where would we end up? Well, I don't know, but probably don't, you don't want to go there. You know, you might not even be able to get out of the river at that point, depending on
right
where it was, right? And our life is the same way. So I would say that if you're not in an environment anymore, and many of us are not, that has a lot of external structure, then you have to be intentional, even more intentional, and really think of it like an opportunity to design your life, to design your day in a way that maybe even supports and is more congruent with your values and what you want. So this idea of constraints is really important. This idea of non-negotiables is really important. You know, when mm-hmm you think about your day, when is it going to start? And when is it going to end? And then what, we talk a lot about this. I know, Shalene, you talk a lot about this. What are the rituals or routines that you're going to wrap around the end? So think about a morning ritual, you know, think about an evening ritual. We also talk with our full focus planner about workday startup ritual, a workday shutdown ritual. We have to kind of impose structure.
Can you share with folks what you mean by a workday startup ritual?
Yeah. Well, one of the things we do often is that we book our calendar from, you know, let's say you work 9 to 5 or 9 to 6. You've got a meeting that starts at 9 and you've got a meeting that ends at 5 or 6, right? And so there's no time to do, like you hear executives or business owners say a lot, like, I don't have any time to do the actual work. And what they mean is, like, I don't have time to answer email. I don't have time to get prepared for my meetings. I don't have time to go through that stack of papers that somebody stuck on my desk. And so when you have a workday startup and shutdown ritual, you would include things like, you know, answer Slack messages or email messages if you use Slack. Maybe you need to do a post on Instagram if that's a big part of your business. Maybe you need to look at your briefs for the day. So like today I came in and I had a brief for your show. Now I know you, so I didn't have to really like wrap my head around your show, but sometimes I'm doing a show with somebody that I don't know. And so I really need to be briefed on that so that when, you know, 1:30 comes around and it's time for that interview, I know who I'm talking to and who their audience is,
yeah,
so I can add value. And so in the same way, at the end of your day, you want to have some kind of a ritual where you're going to wind down so that when you leave, whether that's walking from, you know, like my home office is right next to my dining room at the house to the kitchen, or whether that's you're going to get in your car and drive home, you've answered your emails, you've answered your Slack messages. If you needed to respond to comments on Instagram, you've done that. You know, you've done those things that tend to be the things that we carry over into the nighttime hours or the things we do early in the morning that sabotage those routines, like our morning routine, our morning ritual that really sets us up for good self-care and for a great productive day.
It's really good. We'll get back to the interview with Megan in just a moment, but I wanted to take a second to tell you about the device I've been using for my skin. And many of you have been asking, I know now I sound like an influencer, A lot of you have been asking, but for real, I do get questions all the time about my skincare routine. I've done a few podcasts sharing what topical products I use on my skin. But I think truly what's made the biggest difference of all is doing the microdermabrasion myself at home. So I have this machine. It's called an UltraDerm MD, and I literally can do microdermabrasion on my own skin at home. And if you've ever looked into having that done at a spa, you know that that can cost like $200, $300 just for one treatment. If that's something you've looked into, I highly recommend that you save your money and invest in your own microdermabrasion system that you can use at home. Specifically, the one that I use is from Trophy Skin. It's called the UltraDerm MD. It exfoliates your skin. It improves the way that your skin absorbs all the products you're putting on it. It makes your complexion super shiny and smooth. It helps to just get rid of all those dry patches, and it makes your pores much tighter, much smaller. It makes your makeup go on just beautifully. Now, typically, this machine runs for $349, but as a listener of the Chalene Show, they're going to give you 30% off. You can get 30% off by using the code LIFER. Don't forget that LIFER when you go to trophyskin.com. You'll use the code LIFER at checkout, and that's going to give you 30% off. They've got other products too, so if that's like out of the budget, they've got this Brightener MD that I love to use. It uses microcurrent stimulation and ultrasonic waves to improve the appearance of your skin. And that's under $100. Plus, you get your 30% off when you use code LIFER. Again, that's trophyskin.com, code LIFER. All right, let's get back to the show. What I was just thinking about, the way I would describe that for me is cushion.
Yes, exactly.
Right? Like, so for example, word. Our time together, such a great example. I looked at our time schedule together and I realized that there was no time for me in my schedule today to, after our interview, to like write myself some notes or to write you a thank you card or to even to upload a separate recording for it. Mm-hmm. And so it's just like next meeting.
Right.
And that's why I think also sometimes we feel like, I'm letting people down because like I'm getting all my things done on my schedule, but yet there's no time to do it.
Right. We're not really accounting for all those little things that are really important, that are kind of the things that enable us to really take a deep breath at the end of the day and to be present with our kids instead of, you know, I know when I don't do this and when this just all goes haywire for me, it looks like I'm standing in my kitchen with a 2-year-old grabbing my leg, trying to answer an email while I'm stirring something on the stove. You know, like it's just not good. I'm not present. I'm irritable. I feel exhausted versus like I can get down on the floor and play with her, or I can make dinner and have a glass of wine and really enjoy that process and talk to my kids or, you know, my husband or something. So that's what it's harried versus present is what it feels like when you have that cushion, like you're saying.
We are so conditioned, everybody in society, but maybe it's because I am a woman, but I just feel like women too, we're like, we feel so guilty if we freaking sit down and just do nothing. Like,
yep.
And no offense, like if I see my husband sitting on the couch, I'm like, do you need a list or something? Do you need something to do?
Right.
And he's just okay with having a moment. He'll literally say, he's like, I just need a moment. Why do we feel so guilty when we take a moment? And is it productive for us to be non-productive?
Yeah. Well, I think we feel guilty because we live in a culture that says people need to always be busy, you know, that work and activity are the primary orientations of our life. And in reality, there are, you know, at least 10 domains of life of which our vocation is only one. And I think we just get all tangled up in this hustle culture. It's almost like a self-propelled thing where the energy that we have during the day in our work comes home with us and it just keeps pushing us from behind. Mm. And I think you're right. I think women feel that. I mean, the data would say that this is true, that the women feel that, you know, exponentially more than men. But here's the thing that's really interesting. And, you know, I'm really having to figure this out for myself as a mom of 5 kids with a pretty significant business. It's not easy. But what I've learned is that non-achievement time is actually incredibly powerful for achievement later. So when you have a hobby, and I know some of you guys are like, hobby, really? Like, I'm not in the season of life for a hobby. You know, when you have a hobby, what it does for you is it allows you to have a break mentally. It allows you to mentally recharge, to make different kinds of connections in your brain, to rejuvenate your body, and to let those stress hormones come down so that when you come back to work or when you're trying to be present with people that you care about, you actually have something to give, you know. And I don't know about you. In fact, Shalene, I think we were actually talking about this when we did the interview. My best ideas always come when I'm not working, whether that's running or working out or, you know,
fishing. We'll talk about how we run slow.
We run slow. We're really slow. You know, but that's where the ideas come from. In the shower. I mean, that's the classic one, right? But it's not when you're like doubled down, hustling at your desk. That's not where your best ideas for the future are going to come from. So if you care about the future, if you care about innovation, then this idea of non-achievement, which we really get into in the book, is a powerful performance strategy.
For women in particular, when we struggle with that work-life balance piece, I don't know if this is true for you, but for me, I had to make a definitive decision that one is more important than the other.
Yeah.
That when push came to shove, if, for example, I was going to miss a deadline or, you know, not be asked to speak at something or to just piss off a partner versus do wrong by my kids or my family. Yep. Like, it was just no question for me. Yep. I just wasn't an issue. Do you think that's an important, like, almost decision that we have to be very clear on?
Well, I don't know that I've thought about it exactly like that. I think that's really interesting. In a way, that hierarchy of non-negotiables is kind of that, you know? Like, it is saying that we understand that your professional results are at the bottom for a reason. For one reason, they have to be supported by your self-care and by your relational priorities. You know, that if those things get out of whack, I mean, if you've ever known anybody in the middle of a, you know, terrible health crisis or a really messy divorce trying to run their business, it's really hard because, as it turns out, life feels a lot more like a plate of spaghetti than a bento box. You know, it all just gets in there together, you know? Mm-hmm. But I think if I really had to call that for myself, I would say the same thing, that, you know, it's my family. I'm not going to look back at my kids. And really, I think this was the catalyst decision for me when I was making that call around being done at 3:30. I'm not going to look back 10 or 20 years from now and think, if only I had been more available to my kids, they would be okay right now. You know, I don't want that moment. So I mean, I think push comes to shove, that's who I'm going to pick. However, what I would say is, I don't think that it has to be either or. I mean, really what we're advocating for in this book is the idea of winning at work and succeeding at life. And if you design your life around your non-negotiables, around the most important things, which we walk you through this process to figure this stuff out, then I think there is enough room for both, but you can't do everything.
I completely agree with what you said. Just trying to think through this myself, I feel like I've had to make, and I think it's easier, just my opinion.
Yeah.
If we decide in our head which is more important in order to have that balance, because there will come a moment where you're like, I have to make a decision, and one of these things is really going to suffer.
Yep.
And I have to make a decision, even though my non-negotiable might be XYZ with regard to my profession or my career or my job. But I have to make this right decision right now because I've always said this is more important than that.
Yeah.
So for me, I've always said that, like, I have the rest of my life when my kids are little. I have the rest of my life to get it right in business. And I really am not going to get a chance to get this right with them.
Well, and I think that's really important to remember. You know, that came up for me recently. My husband Joel and I were thinking about going on for part of spring break. Our kids had a different spring break, so we didn't have a family trip planned. We were going to go on a getaway. And I had a couple of things in the afternoon, like doctor's appointments, you know, just personal appointments. And I had been away from Naomi, our 2-year-old. And, you know, I've been out of that stage for a long time because my other kids are much older. And she was just really clingy. And we were out on a date night, which is one of our relational priorities together. And I told Joel, I said, I really want to go on this trip with you by myself. And that's something we love to do. And finally, with COVID lifting, we're able to do it again, you know? And I said, but I just don't feel like at this season of our life with a little toddler who needs to be well attached to me, I don't think it's a good idea for us to go away for 4 or 5 days. I just think that'll be too hard on her. And so, you know, we really prioritize our marriage. I know that's really important for you, but this is a season in our life when she's little. When she's 5 or 8, won't matter so much, you know, it'll be different. But right now I feel like there's a kind of almost submission to her needs and letting that be the dominant priority when push comes to shove, even in two really good options, like go on a getaway with your husband or stay home with your 2-year-old, you know, I mean, those are two good options. And I think that's kind of what you're talking about. You know, we do have to have some hierarchy and that changes at different seasons of our life.
And let's be honest, we both have like really supportive husbands.
Yes, true.
Which is like such an advantage. I mean, I've got girlfriends who are single and I'm like, I just do not know how you do it.
Yeah.
And you're like, you're missing this whole other person who can help pick them up and help schedule and help with emotional needs. And
right.
I know
it's
that there
lot.
Are people who are listening right now who are married or in a relationship and maybe your partner, significant other isn't helpful in that way, even though you have a partner. But how does somebody achieve this kind of balance when they are a mom or a dad and they don't have the help or the partnership that they deserve?
Yeah.
And they are trying to win at work and win at home, but it's just them.
Totally. Well, my husband was a single dad before we got married and he was trying to juggle two kids and an executive career. And it was really hard. So I have a lot of empathy for this, friends that are single moms. And I think it's hard. I think it is harder. I think we need to be just really straight with that.
Yep.
This is easier if it's a two-person job than if it's a one-person job.
I think that's so important that you said that because, and I want everyone who's trying to do that yourself right now for whatever reason, listen, there's no question about it. It is so much harder. And so you've got to give yourself that much grace.
Absolutely.
And you have to set more realistic expectations.
Totally.
And then the truth of the matter is there may be certain areas where you just have to say, this is more important than that. And while I would love to have the six-pack abs right now and be ready for a fitness competition and have a job and have kids who are not killing each other, I've got to decide which of those things is most important right now.
Yeah. And that's what I would say too, is that, you know, you have to have grace for yourself and don't let the best be the enemy of the good. Don't let your ideal life of what you'd love to be doing in every area keep you from doing anything and just sort of letting that sense of failure overwhelm you. Because what I have found to be true, and this is like counter to my personality, is that small hinges swing big doors. And what I mean about that is maybe there's a habit like you're going to just wake up every morning and plan your day. That's going to be the intentional thing that you're going to do. That's kind of one of your self-care non-negotiables. Or you're going to really focus on getting 8 hours of sleep a night. You know, you don't have time right now to exercise or really focus on your nutrition in the way you want, but man, you're going to focus on your sleep. You know what? Those little changes start to build on each other. And pretty soon you have a little more energy, a little more capacity. You get a little more creative thinking because you're not so tired. And all of a sudden you can start to think about other things that maybe at one time seemed impossible, but you start to see how to incrementally build on those things. And I know in my life, I have been guilty before of really wanting to do everything and then being discouraged that I couldn't and then not doing anything. And, you know, if I could go back 20 years and tell myself, hey, it's okay, you got plenty of time, you know, just do a little bit now and it'll build on each other. 1% improvements day over day over day turn out to be a lot pretty quick, you know?
Yeah.
So hopefully that's encouraging.
How do we catch or what suggestions do you have so that we can catch ourselves when we are really slipping into that overwork mode?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think having to begin with a vision of what you want it to look like so that you can understand and see more quickly in relief what it looks like when it's out of alignment is helpful.
Okay.
I think for me, the battle is won or lost on the calendar. So, you know, we talk about in the book a number of different practices to go through in order to get the double win. And the first one is to define your double win. And that's kind of what those non-negotiables and then to constrain your workday, but then to schedule what matters. You know, it's kind of like that old Stephen Covey demonstration. I'm sure you've seen it. It's like a terrible old YouTube video from like the early 1990s or the 80s where he shows how.
I live by my Covey planner, my Franklin Covey planner.
Me too. I used to absolutely love that. So he has this big glass cylinder and he puts in, you know, the big rocks on the bottom and then the middle sized rocks and then the little ones and then the pebbles and then the sand and everything fits. But if he flips the order and he puts the sand in first and then the little pebbles and the bigger rocks and so forth, there's no room for the big rocks, which represent the most important priorities. And so that's where we can really use our calendars to schedule those big rocks, you know, our most important priorities, our non-negotiables before everything else. And I think that I can usually see on my calendar if things are getting out of whack before I even ever get there. You know, we talk about in our planner, our full focus planner, going through a weekly preview process where you're really looking ahead so you know what's coming and you can catch it before it's like a tsunami overwhelming you.
Yeah, that's great. That's great advice. I'm glad that you mentioned that we can sometimes slip into that mindset where I can't do it all, so therefore I'm not going to do anything.
Yeah.
So speak to that person right now who's listening and just is so overwhelmed by the thought of being overwhelmed that they've kind of lost their mojo and yet they can feel that tug that they're supposed to be doing something more.
Yeah.
And maybe they're using like, well, I can't do anything for me and I can't do anything professionally, etc. because I'm 100% focused on my kids. And if I were to take anything else on, it would be in some way dishonoring them.
Mm.
And I could be wrong, but I think sometimes we can use that as an excuse so that we don't even have to try.
Yeah. Well, there's kind of a couple questions in there. I think the first thing I would say, if you're just feeling really overwhelmed and just sort of like run over and you don't even know where to start. First of all, I've heard that from a lot of people more than normal lately. And I think that that is the kind of latent COVID or 2020 effect, you know, that a lot of us are coming out of COVID kind of with our tires on fire, you know, if you will, and just feeling
our flat tires,
just really burnt out and exhausted emotionally, physically, mentally, at every level. If that's you, I would just recommend that you start with sleep. You know, this is so easy to underestimate, but sleep is everything. And you will be
Girl,
shocked.
You are speaking my love language.
Right, I know. I always tell my husband my love language is spelled S-L-E-E-P, you know. If you want to show me you love me, give me a nap. But you know that when we're tired, everything seems more complicated, more overwhelming. I know when I start using the language of overwhelm, I'm just physically tired or emotionally tired often. So that's what I would say. It's just only focus on that 8 hours a night. Give that 2 weeks or 30 days. And my guess is a lot of that lifts and you start to have clarity about what needs to happen next. You know, for those of you who are moms who feel like, I really can't imagine devoting any time or attention to anything outside of my family right now. You're in a really intense season. What I have found as a mom of five is that when I have something else, and it could be 15 minutes a day or an hour a week that I make time for, whether it's, you know, some kind of business thing, this is not true anymore since that's my work all the time, but maybe it's a side hustle, maybe it's a hobby, you will have more to give the people you love, and what you are able to give them will be a greater contribution and a model to them of how to take care of yourself and how to love others well, that I think you can't underestimate what a gift that's going to be. And it doesn't have to be a lot, but it makes a difference. A mom who's not looking to her kids to be everything for her is a better mom, you know?
Yes, that's great. Thank you for giving us a simple solution.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just so simple. And I appreciate that because I think we're looking for this big answer,
right?
This really complicated system, but sleep, you know, in the season that we're in right now, caring for my father and Alzheimer's, like it's the answer. It's the difference between a good day and a horrible day is sleep.
Yeah.
It's just, and I realize how much that has an impact on my brain and the way that I function, the way that I think, the way that I make decisions. Like you said, emotion, energy, that I feel overwhelmed even when I shouldn't be simply because I haven't had enough sleep. So thank you for that really simple suggestion. The last thing I wanted to ask you about, and you didn't talk too much about this in the book, but I'm curious. What are some of the things that you learned growing up with your dad, who is a self-professed former workaholic or workaholic in recovery? What things did you learn as a kid? Like, I wonder, did my kids know when I was overwhelmed with work? Like, were they aware of it or what, did I do a pretty good job of hiding it? What did you notice?
I think your kids are probably aware of it. You know, sorry, that's probably not the answer some of you want to hear. Yeah, sorry. You know,
they get old enough. Therapy fund for them,
right? I know. I jokingly say I'm not saving for college. I'm saving for therapy. You know, for all my kids. But yeah, you know, my dad has had an amazing transformation around this. But I was talking to a bunch of our coaches the other night, and just kind of telling the story that, you know, I'm the oldest of five, and there is about 10 years between me and my youngest sister, all girls. And it was really at the very end of high school that he started figuring some of this out. So it was really my whole life that he was a workaholic. And I've always loved my dad. We've always been close, but he was really absent emotionally, physically, all that kind of stuff growing up. And my mom really felt like a single mom. You know, we tell the story very candidly in the book when He came to her and he had just accomplished something amazing in his job and he had a big bonus check and he thought she was going to be so proud. And, you know, she was grateful, but she said, I just feel like I never see you. You're never home and your daughters need you. And I feel like a single mom. And I remember a lot of that. I remember him coming home with his laptop and going into the green lazy boy chair in our kind of mustard colored living room, date myself a little bit. And, you know, he would just eat dinner quickly and then go back to work. And then he would come home from work and go back to work, you know, so it was a lot of that. And what it makes you feel like when you're a kid is that you're not important.
This is going to be good. This is going to be good. I'm leaning in.
Yeah. It makes you feel like you're not important, you know, even though in his mind, he was thinking, I'm doing this for the family. I'm providing for my family. Nothing is more important than providing, taking care of my family. The message that I heard was, you're not as important as whatever's on this screen, you know? And that wasn't his heart. And, you know, thankfully we have a great relationship now and we're business partners and, you know, we love working together. And now we get to redeem that story and help other people, you know, live a different story than that, which is so great. But there's a lot of regret and a lot of loss in that. And I think our hope and our prayer is that in telling those stories and in writing this book, that maybe people would start to think earlier than he did that there's another way, you know, that it doesn't have to be like this, that you can win at work and succeed at life. So that's our hope.
That was awesome. Right. We have to end right there. There's so many great takeaways in the book, very specific suggestions. And I think that it's a book that just about anyone needs to pick up, especially those people who, anyone who might be struggling to figure that out. And I think it's also important to note that this isn't something you like figured out once and you're like, well, I've got that figured out for the rest of my life. You kind of have to, almost like going to the gym, constantly revisit those practices. So thank you for outlining them so succinctly and for being a role model in that area for not just for women, but for parents. I think it's really, really important. I mean, it is so important that we figure out how to, as you said, raise great kids who do feel important, that don't feel as though mom and dad's work life was more important than they were, and that we not use the excuse of like, well, I'm doing it for them, you know? And I think your book just does such a great job to help others. So I hope that people will be sure to pick that up. I've got a link in our show notes where you guys can grab a copy. And Megan, how can people connect with you online? Where are you most active in social?
Well, I'm actually not very active in social. Good. That's kind of been one of the things that for me has been something I decided not to make a non-negotiable. So the best ways to find me would be at about the book, winandsucceedbook.com, or on our company website at michaelhyatt.com.
Love this. Thank you so much for this conversation. You're awesome.
Oh, thanks for having me, Shalene. This has been a blast.
I want to tell you about a really exciting live event that we have coming up. It's the MIA Live virtual event. It's taking place on May 26th and 27th, 2021. To sign up, you can visit shalene.com/virtual. MIA students, if you're listening right now and you're already in the Marketing Impact Academy, be sure to check your email so you can claim your free tickets. This event is virtual and it's open to everyone, but I highly recommend attending our live event. We're going to cover some awesome topics, and obviously it's not just going to be my mom and myself. It's going to be a ton of our other experts and professors from within the Marketing Impact Academy. Some of the topics we're going to cover are Instagram, Facebook, Facebook groups, YouTube, TikTok, Pinterest. We're going to talk about Clubhouse. We're going to talk about products, network marketing, and so much more. Oh, and there's also going to be VIP, but there's very limited space in VIP. So you're definitely going to want to get on the list and join the VIP live event before it's too late. Again, that's shalene.com/virtual to attend our live virtual event. And I am so excited. I can't wait to see you there. I wish it was in person, and hopefully we'll get to do an MIA live event in person sometime soon. But for now, this live virtual event I know is going to be popping. It's going to be fun. It's going to be entertaining, and it's going to be, of course, extremely valuable.